1 Kings chapter 15. As I said this morning, our title for tonight is The Slippery Slope, because we looked at some of the things that Rehoboam did to the kingdom. He was the one that helped really divide it up because of his decision about forced labor and taxation and things. But what we're going to see... Yes, I see. What we're also going to see is how the next kings of Israel take things a step farther. And that's a general principle that you see throughout Scripture, is that when one generation sets the trajectory, the next generation will take it even farther. So whichever way you're going, if you have a generation that tries to pull things back towards righteousness, then a lot of times you'll see the next generation take that a little farther, but you know, not always. And so that's what we're looking at tonight in 1 Kings chapter 15. So, a reminder again at the way that the historian is chronologicalizing. That sounds like a good word, doesn't it? The way he's writing this information is... He will start with one king. Remember, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, when they split, that's the beginning of each one. So they both start at the same time. Rehoboam and Jeroboam both start in the year 975. I don't know if you can see this. Let me zoom it in just a little bit more, and perhaps we can see these numbers. So you have to sort of turn your head on its side to get a real good look at these. But Jeroboam and Rehoboam both start in the year 975. So the historian recorded for us Rehoboam's life story. And since Rehoboam died before Jeroboam, he recorded Jeroboam first. And then he's going to go back and cover Jeroboam. So we sort of get this back and forth feel to the narrative, where he'll cover the kings of the southern kingdom, he'll cover a couple in a row, and then he'll go back and cover Jeroboam. And he keeps moving a little forward, and then he has to go back to the northern kingdom and catch himself up. And then he'll go down to the southern kingdom and cover the next few kings, and then he'll come back up and catch himself up, chronologically speaking. So we looked at Rehoboam's reign, and there wasn't a whole lot going on there other than the wars that he was continually fighting with Jeroboam. He kept trying to bring the northern kingdom back into submission, but it didn't work at any time. So Rehoboam doesn't reach nearly the same length of reign as his father and grandfather. Saul reigned for how long? This is your pop quiz. First king of Israel, Saul reigned for 40 years. And then David reigned for how long? 40 years. And then Solomon reigned for how long? 40 years. And then how long did Rehoboam reign? Don't look. 17 years. So quite a bit shorter. Now Rehoboam was 41 years old when he took the throne. So he was already a bit older than David. David was 30 years old when he took the throne. Rehoboam 41. And he reigned 17 years, which means he only lives to be 57 years old. So, not by any stretch did Rehoboam live to be an old man. Jeroboam reigns for 22 years in the northern kingdom, which of course means that Jeroboam is on the throne for a couple of years after Rehoboam dies. So, where we are picking up, chapter 14 ended with the death of Rehoboam. And I know that these names get confusing. Rehoboam, Jeroboam. I had this Dr. Seuss book when I was a kid that talked about this woman who had 53 sons, and she named them all Dave. And it was just about how crazy it was trying to get them to do anything, because she'd call for Dave and they'd all come running, right? It's bath time, Dave, and 53 boys had come running. So she changed all their names. And the poem was just about all the different names of these kids and what she called them. And they were kind of crazy, but... being is that these are not good European names, we have a little bit of a hard time keeping track of them. So Rehoboam and Jeroboam sound very similar. They are, of course, different fellows. And So we have to try to keep track of those things. So verse 31 of chapter 14 ends Rehoboam's life. Rehoboam slept with his fathers, was buried with his fathers in the city of David. His mother's name was Naamah the Ammonite, and Abijam, his son, reigned in his place. That's where we left off. So Abijam is taking the throne. And if you look on our chart here, you can see where Abijam picks up in 958 B.C., But interesting thing about Abijam in chapter 15, verse 1. Now in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that's the king of the northern tribe, Abijam began to reign over Judah, and he reigned for how long? Not 40. How long does Abijam reign? 3 years. Only three. That's a pretty short term, isn't it? I mean, even for presidents, that's short. We give them 4 years to get something done. But for kings, that was exceptionally short. But he only reigns for 3 years. He reigned for 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom. And now here's a little interesting thing about Abijam. We said that Abijam's name means, "My father is Yah," or "Jehovah is my father." So it's a good faithful person's name. But his mother is Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom. Now you got to remember that the original Hebrew script does not have any vowels. The vowel points were added by the Masoretes, which were Hebrew scribes, in about the 6th century AD. So we're talking, if we're in the 10th century BC, we're 1600 years later that they add the vowel points. So if you take out the vowels in Abishalom, you come up with a very familiar sounding name, Abshalom. Does that sound at all familiar? Absalom. Absalom. Maacah, the daughter of Absalom, right? So, and incidentally, the only time that this name is ever found is in reference to David's son, Absalom. So, Abijam, his mother, is Absalom's daughter. So the royal family's staying closely knit, I guess. And that is not unheard of in royal families back in the day. They tend to stay tight together. But that gives us a little insight into Abijam here. His mother's name is Maacah, the daughter of Absalom. And probably what we're talking about here is a granddaughter. The word daughter, bat, Hebrew bat, can be used of both direct daughters or of somewhat removed by generation. So we're probably talking about a granddaughter here. It's possible that it's a daughter, but that would make this woman quite a bit older, given the time spans that we're talking about. So his mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Abishalom, and he walked in all the sins that his father did before him. And his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father was. Right there is an interesting little proof that not always when it says father or son is it talking about direct generational connection. Most of the time, yes, if it says it was the son of somebody, it's talking about a direct son. But occasionally it can be talking about a grandfather or a great-grandfather because is David the father of Abijam? No, it'd be Rehoboam and then Solomon and then David. So it's the great-grandfather is David to Abijam. But here's this little description that we get of Abijam, and we're going to see this of every king, just about, that's listed in the narrative. There's going to be this short little synopsis of how God views their kingship. And how did Abijam do in his 3 years as king? Good or bad? He was definitely not perfect. But how does God classify him? He did everything bad that his father did. Now, we have to go back just a little bit. What did his fathers do? Because remember, we're talking about the southern kingdom. So we're talking about Rehoboam and Solomon. He doesn't measure up to his great-granddaddy David. But what about Solomon and Rehoboam? How did they respond to God? Many wives, so there was a problem there. And what did the many wives do to Solomon? They drew his heart after other gods, didn't they? And not only Solomon, but if you remember, Rehoboam also, for the first 3 years of his reign, he served the Lord pretty faithfully. You know, the kingdom split, and all of the faithful people were pouring out of the northern kingdom because of Jeroboam's calves. They didn't want to worship the idols, and so they were coming south, and they strengthened Rehoboam's reign. But in the fourth year of Rehoboam's reign, he abandoned the worship of Jehovah. And so he left being faithful. So Rehoboam even brings idols into the southern kingdom, probably more than Jeroboam was doing up in the north. At least Jeroboam had the whole nation worshiping one set of gods, those two golden calves. Rehoboam opened it up so that they could worship whatever they wanted. And Solomon, his dad, had built high places and pagan altars, and so Rehoboam expanded on that. And we even had that nice little statement that during Rehoboam's rule, the male cult prostitutes came back into the land. Of course, this was a practice of the ancient Eastern pagan religions that was part of their worship in their temples. And so he brought them back into the land. And so this is what's going on in the southern kingdom. Well, Abijam continues those practices. He doesn't try to return the land to the right worship of Jehovah. Now, we have some interesting things. I want to cover the account of him here in Kings, and then we're going to go over to Chronicles and take a look, because just like the Gospels have parallel passages, Kings and Chronicles parallel each other quite a bit. Sometimes their descriptions are almost verbatim. Sometimes they're quite a bit different. But we know this about Abijam. His heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God. Verse 4, why does God then not boot him off of the throne like he did to Saul? When Saul was unfaithful, Saul got kicked off the throne. So is God going to do that to Abijam? Nope, why not? Because of the promise made to David. Right, look at verse 4. Nevertheless, for David's sake, the Lord gave him a lamp in Jerusalem. So, I mean, you got to hold this picture in your mind. Where do you put a lamp? In the middle of the daytime, right? You put a lamp outside at noon? No, you put a lamp in a dark place. And so here's this picture, like the entire kingdom, northern and southern, is dark. There's no truth. They're not following what God has left them in his word and in his law, but God's going to leave a lamp. So there's this little light in the middle of a very dark place, and that is God's promise. For the sake of David, the sake the Lord his God gave him a lamp in Jerusalem, setting up his son after him, and establishing Jerusalem, because David did what was right in the eyes of the Lord and did not turn aside from anything that he commanded him all the days of his life, except in the matter of Uriah the Hittite. So, because David loved the Lord his God, and because God gave him the promise of the Davidic covenant, God's not destroying the southern kingdom. Right. So, how bad must have Abijam's reign been in 3 years for God to say, the only thing that's keeping me and keeping this kingdom here is my promise to David? I mean, that's how far things have slidden since David. Solomon started it. He started taking them the wrong direction with his idol worship. Rehoboam kind of completed things and brought it even further. And now Abijam is living the culmination of all those decisions. But he only lives for 3 years. But God doesn't destroy Judah. He doesn't destroy Abijam because of God's own promise to David. Now we get this other note in verse 6. Now there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all the days of his life. So why do you think Rehoboam is being brought back up? Because which king are we talking about? Abijam. But it says there was war between Rehoboam and Jeroboam all the days of his life. Yes. So the wars that started with Rehoboam, remember, Rehoboam and Jeroboam fought their whole life. And so the wars that started under Rehoboam have continued into Abijam's reign. And that's why it's stated that way. There's wars all the days of their life. Now, the rest of the acts of Abijam and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? The answer is, yes, they are. And there was war between Abijam and Jeroboam. And Abijam slept with his fathers. They buried him in the city of David, and Asa, his son, reigned in his place. So, there, a very short description of a very short rule. 3 years on the throne. And we're not really even sure how old he is from the time he begins to the time he's done. But God's description of him is he didn't do what's right. Now I want you to turn over to Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, chapter 12. Chapter 13. We left off last week sort of detailing that in the end of Rehoboam's, in the beginning of Rehoboam's reign, Shishak, the king of Egypt, came up and plundered the cities of Judah. And we tried to show you that picture of the Egyptian monument that describes Shishak's pillaging and plundering. And because we have a nice little, archaeological record of it alongside of Scripture that shows us what happened there. So that's what's talked about in chapter 12. Chapter 13, in the 18th year of King Jeroboam, Abijah began to rule over Judah. He reigned for 3 years. His mother's name was Micaiah, which, again, don't get confused there by the different vowels, because the vowels weren't there. The name is the same, Micaiah. The daughter of Uriel of Gibeah shouldn't throw you either, because we're just tracing her lineage through her father. And so we're getting the other side of the family. Now, we know there was war between Ahijah and Jeroboam, but now we're going to get a description of it. And this is something the book of Kings doesn't give us, and it's a description of this battle. Abijah went out to battle, having an army of valiant men of war, 400,000 chosen men. And Jeroboam drew up his line of battle against him with 800,000 chosen men, mighty warriors. So, if you're in this battle, which number do you want to have? 400,000 or 800,000? You'd probably rather have the 800,000, right? Well, we were just talking about this the other day, how different battles are in the modern world. We think about how terrible the weapons are now with nuclear war and all the different things we have. But boy, folks, the number of people that died in a single battle back in these days. Because you're not talking about, you know, when we go into battles now, we throw a bazillion rounds of ammunition that direction and hope we hit something. Well, modern warfare has learned that, and so you spread out. There's not as much to hit over there. But when you're talking 400,000 people against 800,000, it's like, picture this field out here, and over on the south side, you've got 400,000 people all lined up. Some of them might be carrying little bows and arrows. Some of them are carrying spears. Some of them swords. And on the other side, you've got 800,000. And now you fight the battle, and they just all start running towards each other. And arrows are flying back and forth, and swords are slinging. And by the end of the day, don't hit any buttons on that. By the end of the day, you've got hundreds of thousands of people lying out there dead. It's a bloody affair. Excuse me. But here they are. They're both lined up. And so in Abijah is going to try to bring the northern kingdom back into submission to the southern kingdom and reunite things. That's not God's plan, but he's going to try it anyway. Verse 4. Then Abijah stood up on Mount Zemarim, that is in the hill country of Ephraim, and said, "Hear me, O Jeroboam." Now I want to pause there for a moment too, because if they are in the hill country of Ephraim, whose territory are they in? Which one? The north. They're up north, aren't they? Ephraim is a northern tribe. So they're not south in Judah, which means who has the home field advantage? The north. So not only is Abijam out of his home territory, he's also outnumbered 2-1. That's not a great place to be. But listen to this speech he gives. It's a good one. Hear me, O Jeroboam and all Israel. Ought you not to know that the Lord God of Israel gave the kingship over Israel forever to David and his sons by a covenant of salt? Yet Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, a servant of Solomon, the son of David, rose up and rebelled against his Lord, and certain worthless scoundrels gathered about him and defied Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, when Rehoboam was young and irresolute and could not withstand them. So how is he painting the northern tribes? They're just a bunch of ragtag rabble, right? That's how he's pointing them. They rebelled against the house of David. Is that what they did? Not quite. Do you understand why it's so important to know your history? Because that's not what happened. Who told Jeroboam to take the northern tribes? God did. God told him that this was something that God was going to bring about as a punishment to Solomon and to Rehoboam. And so it's not that Jeroboam was just this ragtag rabble-rouser. He was following what the Lord wanted them to do. Now, after that, he didn't do what God wanted him to do. But the splitting of the kingdom was not just the result of a mob frenzy. So he's trying to convince them with that. Verse 8, "And now you think to withstand the kingdom of the Lord in the hands of the sons of David, because you are a great multitude and have with you the golden calves that Jeroboam made you for gods." That part is true. That Jeroboam thinks he's going to win just because he's got a bigger army. And he thinks that those golden calves are going to protect him in the fight. And that was true of just about every idol-carrying heathen in the ancient world. They would bring their gods into battle with them, and whichever god won the battle was the stronger god. And so he tells them in verse 9, "Have you not driven out the priests of the Lord, the sons of Aaron and the Levites, and made priests for yourselves like the people of other land? Whoever comes for ordination with a young bull or seven rams becomes a priest of what are no gods." So who's ministering as priests? Anybody that wants to. All you have to do is bring the right price for ordination. You can become a priest. Why does Abijam have a problem with that? Why does he issue that as a challenge to them? Who allows certain people? Abijam does? Not just Abijam. God. Does God have standards for who could be priests and serve at the temple? Yes, he does. Who were those people? They're supposed to be Levites. So the challenge here is, you northern people, there's no way you're going to win because you guys are not honoring God's law. Now, maybe at this point you're starting to think like I did when I was reading this. Say, wait a second, what was God's estimation of Abijam? He did do right or he did not do right? He did not do right. Isn't this an interesting speech then? Because what he's telling the other people is, you're not doing what God told you to do, but we are. And so we're going to win this battle. Verse 10. "As for us, the Lord is our God, and we have not forsaken him. We have the priests ministering to the Lord who are sons of Aaron, and Levites for their service. They offer to the Lord every morning and every burnt offering and incense of sweet spices. They set out the showbread on the table of pure gold and care for the golden lampstand that its lamps may burn every evening. For we keep the charge of the Lord our God, but you have forsaken him." Well, we're doing what God told us to do in the law, and you aren't. Therefore, behold, God is with us at our head, and his priests with their battle trumpets to sound the call to battle against you, O sons of Israel. Do not fight against the Lord, the God of your fathers, for you cannot succeed. Okay, before you scan ahead here, take your guess. How's this going to go? We have God's statement that Abijam is not a faithful man. Yet here he stands making what sounds like a very faithful speech. Is he going to win the battle or not? Gary says no. Any takers for yes? We'll see. We'll take a vote here. How many of you think, yep, he's going to win the battle? A couple of you. How many think, nope, not a chance. He's not going to win. How many of you undecided? Okay. How many of you are saying, Pastor, I'm going to wait for you to read the rest of it, right? Okay. Interesting. Here, verse 13, Jeroboam had sent an ambush around to come upon them from behind. So the whole time Abijam is giving this speech, Jeroboam has got his troops moving into position behind him. So not only do you have part of this force of 800,000 in front of you, now you're sandwiched between two portions of the army. Thus, when his troops were in front of Judah and the ambush was behind them, and when Judah looked, behold, the battle was in front of and behind them. And what's their response? They cried to the Lord, and the priests blew the trumpets, and the men of Judah raised the battle shout. Can you imagine 400,000 men shouting? What that would sound like? Oh, bring shivers to you, doesn't it? So they shouted, and then the men of Judah raised the battle shout, and when the men of Judah shouted, God defeated Jeroboam and all Israel before Abijah and Judah. And the men of Israel fled before Judah, and God gave them into their hand. Abijah wins. Wait a second. Faithless Abijah, God saves him? Well, he called on God, didn't he? So did the people of Israel when they were in trouble, and so God delivered them. What does Abijah have on his side? You got to think through this. This is tough. Because does God ever do good things for bad people? Obviously, yes. We're sitting here, aren't we? Yeah. Okay. What does Abijah really have on his side? The Davidic covenant. So if we go back to Kings, don't turn her just yet, but if you think back to Kings, what the historian said about Abijah, why was it that God didn't defeat Abijah? Because of the Davidic covenant. It wasn't because Abijah was so faithful here. I mean, it was partly because, yes, they cried out to God in their need and he answered them, but it was because of the Davidic covenant. Okay? So if you continue on here, the men of Israel fled before Judah. God gave them into their hand. This is verse 17. Abijah and his people struck them with great force, so there fell slain of Israel 500,000 chosen men. Yeah, can you believe that? Can you imagine 500,000 men laying dead out in that field? You wouldn't get a chance to bury many. Well, they would come back later and they'd start to bury. But thus, the men of Israel were subdued at that time, and the men of Judah prevailed because they relied on the Lord, the God of their fathers. Right? So God answered their prayer. And Abijah pursued Jeroboam and took cities from him, Bethel with its villages, and Jeshanah with its villages, and Ephron with its villages. And here's a really important part when you're considering the history, is this next verse, in verse 20. Jeroboam did not recover his power in the days of Abijah. And the Lord struck him down, and he died. But Abijah grew mighty. And he took 14 wives and had 22 sons and 16 daughters. And the rest of the acts of Abijah, his ways and his sayings, are written in the story of the prophet Iddo. So, here you have this guy. What does God do with this battle? He saves Abijah and Judah because of the Davidic covenant and because of the fact that they cried out to him in their hour of need. But what does it accomplish historically? It seats Judah as a military power in the region. So that now the northern tribe is no longer this major threat to them all the time. Up until then, they were. And they were constantly at battle. And so now, God is securing the southern nation because of the Davidic covenant by defeating the northern one. Now, God told us a little ways back when he told Jeroboam about taking the northern kingdom. Is the northern kingdom going to last forever? At some point, God's going to reunite them. It is not God's purpose to keep the northern kingdom separate forever. So this is fulfilling that, partly. Okay. So, there you have this. Now, here's what I wonder, is how in the world in 3 years he marries 14 wives and has 22 sons and 16 daughters? Well, obviously, he didn't have all those sons and daughters in the 3 years that he was king. So if Rehoboam was king for 17 years, you have Abijah probably getting married earlier. Abijah may have been born before Rehoboam took the throne. Because remember, Rehoboam was 41 years old. So let's say Rehoboam has a son when he's 20 years old. He takes the throne at 41, that makes Abijah 21 years old, and then Rehoboam reigns for 17, so Abijah could very well be in his mid to late 30s when he takes the throne. So by that point, he's already got wives and sons and daughters, right? But by the time he reigns for 3 years, he has a very large family. And that's the account that we get of him in the book of Chronicles. We'll be doing a little bit of jumping back and forth here in our studies. But Abijam in 3 short years takes the kingdom farther away from the Lord than they were. Now, we don't get much description other than that about what Abijam does. So in what ways did he take the kingdom farther away from God? He doesn't tell us. We can be certain that he continues the idolatrous practices that Rehoboam set up. The male cult prostitutes stay in the land. All of the high places, the pagan altars, are still there come the next generation. So we don't necessarily have to have the details of what Abijam did, but we know that he didn't reverse things at all. He didn't even start. And so, of course, that brings us to verse 9. We covered a whole 8 verses, and I was going to try to get through most of the chapter today. Not going to happen, though, but that's okay. Any questions about anything we covered there?